What Buddhists Believe by Venerable K. Sri Dhammananda Mahathera. Part 1, Chapter 1, Life and Nature of the Buddha. Gautama the Buddha, the founder of Buddhism. Gautama Buddha, the founder of what became to be known as Buddhism, lived in northern India in the 6th century BC. His personal name was Siddhartha, the family name Gautama. The name Buddha was given to him after he attained enlightenment and realized the truth. It means the awakened or the enlightened one. He generally called himself the Tathagata, while his followers called him Bhagava, the blessed one. Others spoke of him as Gautama or Sakyamuni. He was born a prince who seemed to have everything. He had a luxurious upbringing, and his family was of pure descent on both sides. He was the heir to the throne, extremely handsome, inspiring trust, stately and gifted with great beauty of complexion and fine presence. At 16, he married his cousin named Yasodhara, who bore him a son whom they called Rahula. His wife was majestic, cheerful day and night, and full of dignity and grace. Despite all this, he felt trapped amidst the luxury like a bird in a golden cage. During a visit to the city one day, he saw what is known as the four sights, that is, an old man, a sick man, a dead man, and a holy recluse. When he saw the sights one after another, the realization came to him that it is subject to age and death. He asked, "Where is the realm of life in which there is neither age nor death?" The sight of the recluse, who was calm for having given up the craving for material life, gave him the clue that the first step in his search for truth and renunciation. Determined to find a way out of these universal sufferings, he decided to leave home to find a cure, not for himself only, but for all mankind. One night in his 29th year, he bade his sleeping wife and son a silent farewell, saddled his great white horse, and rode off toward the forest. His renunciation is unprecedented in history. He left at the height of youth, from pleasures to difficulties, from certainty of material security to uncertainty, from a position of wealth and power to that of a wandering ascetic who took shelter in the cave and forest, with his ragged robe as the only protection against the blazing sun, rain, and winter winds. He renounced his position, wealth, promise of prestige and power, and a life filled with love and hope in exchange for the search of truth which no one had found. For 6 years, he labored to find the truth. He studied under the foremost masters of the day and learned all these religious teachers who could teach him. When he could not find what he was looking for, he joined a band of ascetics and tortured his body so as to break its power and crush its interference. Since it was believed that truth could be found this way, a man of enormous energy and willpower, he outdid other ascetics in every austerity they proposed. While fasting, he ate so little that when he took hold of the skin of his stomach, he actually touched his spine. He pushed himself to the extent that no man had done and yet lived. He too would have suddenly died had he not realized the futility of self-mortification and decided to practice moderation instead. On the full moon night of the month of Vesakha, he sat under the Bodhi tree at Gaya. Wrapped in deep meditation, it was then that his mind burst the bubble of the universe and realized the truth nature of all life and all things. At the age of 35 years, he was transformed from an earnest truth seeker into the Buddha, the Enlightened One. For nearly half a century, the Buddha walked on the dusty path of India, teaching the Dhamma so that those who heard and practiced could be ennobled and free. He founded an order of monks and nuns, challenged the caste system, raised the status of women, taught religious freedom and free inquiry, opened the gates of deliverance to all, in every condition of life, high or low, saint or sinner, and ennobled the lives of criminals like Angulimala and courtesans like Ambapali. He was towering in wisdom and intellect. Every problem was analyzed in component parts and then reassembled in logical order with the meaning made clear. None could defeat him in dialogue. An unequal teacher. He still is the foremost analyst of the mind and phenomena even up to the present day. For the first time in history, he gave men the power to think for themselves, raised the worth of mankind, and showed that man can reach to the highest knowledge and supreme enlightenment by his own efforts. Despite his peerless wisdom and royal lineage, he was never removed from the simple villager. Surface distinctions of class and caste meant little to him. No one was too little or low for him to help. Often when an outcast or poor and dejected came to him, his self-respect was restored and he turned from the noble life to that of noble being. The Buddha was full of compassion, karuna, and wisdom, panna. Knowing how and what to teach each individual for his own benefit according to his level and capability. He was known to have walked long distances to help one single person. He was affectionate and devoted to his disciples, always inquiring after their well-being and progress. When staying at the monastery, he paid daily visits to the sick wards. His compassion for the sick can be seen from his advice. He who attends the sick attend on me. The Buddha kept order and discipline on the basis of mutual respect. King Pasenadi could not understand how the Buddha maintained such order and discipline in a community of monks, when he, as a king with the power to punish, could not maintain it as well in his court. The Buddha did not claim to have created worldly conditions, universal phenomena, or the universal law, which we call the Dhamma. Although described as Lokavidu, or knower of the worlds, he was regarded as the sole custodian of the universal laws. He freely acknowledged that the Dhamma, together with the working of the cosmos, is timeless. It has no creator, and is independent in the absolute sense. Every conditioned thing that exists in this cosmos is subject to the operation of Dhamma. What the Buddha did, like all other Buddhas before him, was to rediscover this infallible truth and make it known to mankind. In discovering the truth, he also found a means whereby one could ultimately free oneself from being subjected to the endless cycle of conditioning with its attendant evils of unsatisfactoriness. After 45 years of ministry, the Buddha passed away at the age of 80 at Kusinara, leaving behind thousands of followers, monks, and nuns, and a vast treasure store of Dhamma teaching. The impact of his great love and dedication is still felt today. In The Three Greatest Men in History, H.G. Wells states, "In the Buddha, you see clearly a man, simple, devout, lonely, battling for light, a vivid universal in character. Many of our best modern ideas are in closest harmony with it. All the miseries and discontents of life are due, he taught, to selfishness. Before a man can become serene, he must cease to live for his senses or himself. Then he merges into a greater being, Buddhism, in a different language called men to self-forgetfulness. 500 years before Christ. In some ways, he was nearer to us and our needs. He was more lucid upon our individual importance and service than Christ, and less ambiguous upon the question of personal immortality." His renunciation. The renunciation of Prince Siddhartha was the boldest step that a man has ever taken. Critics have condemned Siddhartha for his manner of leaving home and kingdom. Some described it as a callous abandonment of wife and family. Yet what would have happened if he had not left so stealthily and had approached his loved ones for a formal farewell? They would, of course, have implored him to change his mind. The scene would have been hysterical and quite possibly the little domain of his father, Raja Suddhodana, would have been thrown into turmoil. His intention to seek the truth would have had to be aborted by his father and wife, who would prevent him from his renunciation plans. At the age of 29 years, Siddhartha was a full-blooded young man in the prime of life. As it was, the temptation not to abandon all he had known and loved in order to seek the truth must have been formidable. During his final moments in the palace, he visited his bedroom and looked at his slumbering wife and the newborn child. The great impulse to remain and abandon his plan must have caused him agony. Certainly, in those days in India, it was considered a noble thing for a man to forsake home and loved ones to become an ascetic, to lead a holy life. All things considered, it would seem that Siddhartha was right in boldly and quickly achieving his plan. He renounced the world not for his own sake or convenience, but for the sake of suffering humanity. To him, the whole of mankind is one family. The renunciation of Prince Siddhartha at that early age was the boldest step that a man could have taken. Detachment is one of the most important factors for the attainment of enlightenment. The attainment of enlightenment is by way of non-attachment. Most of life's troubles are caused by attachment. We get angry, we worry, we become greedy and complain bitterly. All these causes of unhappiness, tension, stubbornness, and sadness are due to attachment. When we investigate any trouble or worry we have, the main cause is always attachment. Had Prince Siddhartha developed his attachment towards his wife, child, kingdom, and worldly pleasures, he would never have been able to discover the remedy for suffering mankind. Therefore, he had to sacrifice everything, including worldly pleasures, in order to have a concentrated mind free from distraction, in order to find the truth that can cure humanity from suffering. In the eyes of this young prince, the whole world was burning with lust, anger, greed, and man other defilements which ignite the fire of passion. He saw each and every living being, in this including his wife and child, suffering from all sorts of physical and mental ailments. So determined was he to seek a solution for the eradication of suffering amongst suffering humanity that he was prepared to sacrifice everything. 2,500 years after his renunciation, some people shed crocodile tears or criticized him for his action. His wife, however, did not accuse him for desertion when she realized the purpose of his renunciation. Instead, she gave up her luxurious life to lead a simple life as a mark of respect. Here is how a well-known poet saw the renunciation of the Buddha. "'Twas not through hatred of children sweet, 'twas not through hatred of his lovely wife, thriller of hearts not that he loved them less, but Buddhahood more, that he renounced them all." By Dwight Goddard. Nature of the Buddha, light of the world. Understood are the things to be understood. Cultivated are the things to be cultivated. Eradicated are the things to be eradicated. Therefore, Brahmin, I am the Buddha. By Sutta Nipata. As long, brethren, as the moon and sun have not arisen in the world, just as long as there is no shining forth a great light of great radiance, there prevails gross darkness, the darkness of bewilderment. Night is not distinguishable from the day, nor the month, the half moon, and the seasons of the years from each other. But brethren, when the moon and sun arise in the world, then a great light of great radiance shines forth. Gross darkness, the darkness of bewilderment, is no more. Then are months and the half moon, and the seasons of the years. Just so, brethren, as long as a Buddha, who is an Arahant, a Buddha Supreme, arises not, there is no shining forth a great light of great radiance, but gross darkness, the darkness of bewilderment, prevails. There is no proclaiming, no teaching, no showing forth, no setting up, no opening up, no analysis, no making clear of the four noble truths. What four? The noble truth of suffering, the arising of suffering, the ceasing of suffering, and the approaches to the cease of suffering. Wherefore, brethren, do you exert yourselves to realize, this is suffering, this is the arising of suffering, this is the ceasing of suffering, this is the approach to the ceasing of suffering. The above words give us a clear picture of the great value of the arising of the Buddha. To the world, the Buddha arose at a time when Western philosophy, as inaugurated by the Greeks, was led by Heraclitus, who gave a new term to the early religions of the Olympian gods. It was a time when Jeremiah was given a new message among the Jews in Babylon. It was a time when Pythagoras was introducing a doctrine of reincarnation in Italy. It was a time when Confucius was establishing the national life of China by his ethics of conduct. It was a time when India's social fabric was heavily encrusted with priestcraft, self-mortification, caste distinctions, corrupt feudalism, subjection of women, and fear of Romanesco dominance. It was at such a time that the Buddha, the most fragrant flower of the human race, appeared in a land where saints and sages dedicated their lives in a search for truth. He was a great man who wielded an extraordinary influence on others even during his lifetime. His personal magnetism, moral prestige, and radiant confidence, his personal magnetism, moral prestige, and radiant confidence in his discovery made him a popular success. During his active life as a teacher, the Buddha enlightened many who listened to him. He attracted the high and low, rich and poor, educated and illiterate, men and women, householders and ascetics, nobles and peasants. He went in search for the vicious to teach, while the pure and virtuous came in search of him to learn. To all, he gave the gift of the truth that he had discovered. His disciples were kings and soldiers, merchants and millionaires, beggars and courtesans, religious as well as deluded people. When people were deluded, he enlightened them. When they were inflamed with rage and lust, he gave them the cooling water of truth. When they were forsaken and wretched, he extended to them infinite love of his compassionate heart. He did not set out to remold the world. He was Lokavidu, the knower of the world. He knew the world too well to have any illusions about its nature, or to believe that its laws could be completely refashioned to suit the desires of man. He knew that the world does not exist for the pleasure of the man. He knew about the nature of the worldly conditions. He realized the vicissitude of worldly life. He knew the futility of human imagination or daydreaming about the world. He did not encourage wishful thinking in terms of establishing a worldly utopia. Rather, he told each one of the way by which one could later conquer one's own world, the inner subjective world that is everyone's private domain. In simple languages, he told us that the whole world is within us, and the world is led by the mind, and that mind must be trained and cleansed properly. His teaching was basically simple and meaningful: to put an end to evil, to fulfill all good, to purify the mind. This is the advice of all the Buddhas. Dhammapada 183. He taught the people how to eradicate ignorance. He encouraged them to maintain freedom in the mind to think freely. Rigid rituals, rigid dogmas, blind faith, and the caste system all had no place in his way of life. All people were one in the eyes of the Buddha. By every test of what he said, did, and was, he demonstrated himself to be the preeminent man in his day. He declared a faith of service, a ministry of sacrifice and achievement. He advised us to state our life from today onwards as if it is the beginning of our life, and to fulfill our endless responsibilities and duties of daily existence, here and now, without depending on others to do it for us. He gave the world a new explanation of the universe. He gave a new vision of eternal happiness, the achievement of perfection and Buddhahood. He pointed out the way to the permanent state beyond all impermanence, the way to Nibbana, the final deliverance from the misery of existence. His time was 2,500 years ago, yet even today, this great teacher is honored not only by the religious-minded people, he is also honored by atheists, historians, rationalists, and intellectuals all over the world who have acknowledged him as the enlightened, most liberal-minded, and compassionate teacher. Sukho Buddhanam Upado, happy is the birth of the Buddha. Dhammapada 194. Was Buddha an incarnation of God? Never had the Buddha claimed that he was a son or a messenger of God. The Buddha was a unique human being who was self-enlightened. He had no one whom he could regard as his teacher. Through his own efforts, he practiced to perfection the 10 supreme qualities of generosity, discipline, renunciation, wisdom, energy, endurance, truthfulness, determination, goodwill, and equanimity. Through his mental purification, he opened the doors to all knowledge. He knew all things to be known, cultivated all things to be cultivated, and destroyed all things to be destroyed. Indeed, no other religious teacher was comparable to him in terms of cultivation and attainment. So special was he, and so electrifying his message, that many people asked him, what? Not as so much as who he was. Questions on who he was would be with respect to his name, origin, ancestry, etc., while what he was referred to the order of beings to which he belonged. So godly and inspiring was he that even during his time, there were numerous attempts of others to turn him into a god, or a reincarnation of God. Never did he agree to be regarded as such. In the Anguttara Nikaya, he said, I am not indeed a Deva, nor a Gandharva, nor a Yaksa, nor a Manusa. Know ye that I am the Buddha. After enlightenment, the Buddha could no longer be classified even as a Manusa, or an ordinary human being. He belonged to the Buddha Wangsa, special race or species of enlightened beings, all of whom are Buddhas. Buddhas appear in this world from time to time, but some people have the mistaken idea that it is the same Buddha who is reincarnated or appears in the world over and over again. Actually, they are not the same person. Otherwise, there is no scope for others to attain Buddhahood. Buddhists believe that anyone can become a Buddha if he develops his qualities to perfection and is able to remove his ignorance completely through his own efforts. After enlightenment, all Buddhas are similar in their attainment and experience of Nibbana. In India, the followers of many orthodox religious groups tried to condemn the Buddha because of his liberal teaching, which revolutionized the Indian society. Many regarded him as an enemy, when increasing numbers of intellectuals as well as people from all the ranks of society took up the religion. When they failed in their attempt to destroy him, they adopted the reverse strategy of introducing him as a reincarnation of one of their gods. This way, they could absorb Buddhism into their religion. To a certain extent, this strategy worked in India since it had, through the centuries, contributed to the decay and the subsequent uprooting of Buddhism from the land of its origin. Even today, there are certain religionists who try to absorb the Buddha into their beliefs, as a way of gaining converts among Buddhists. The basis for doing so is by claiming that the Buddha himself had predicted that another Buddha would appear in this world, and that the latest Buddha would become even more popular. One group named a religious teacher who lived 600 years after Gautama, the Buddha, as the latest Buddha. Another group said the next Buddha had already arrived in Japan in the 13th century. Yet another group believed that their founder came from the lineage of great teachers like Gautama and Jesus, and that founder was the latest Buddha. These groups advised Buddhists to give up the old Buddha and follow the so-called new Buddha. While it is good to see them giving the Buddha the same status as their own religious teachers, we feel that these attempts to absorb Buddhists into another faith by misrepresenting the truth are in extreme bad taste. Those who claim that the new Buddha had already arrived are obviously misrepresenting what the Buddha had said. Although the Buddha predicted the coming of the next Buddha, he mentioned some conditions which had to be met before this can be possible. It is the nature of Buddhahood that the next Buddha will not appear as the dispensation of the current Buddha still exists. He will appear only when the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path have been completely forgotten. The people living them must be properly guided in order to understand the same truth taught by the previous Buddhas. We are still living within the dispensation of Gautama, the Buddha. Although the moral conduct of the people has, with very few expectations, deteriorated, the future Buddha would only appear at some incalculable period when the path to Nibbana is completely lost to mankind and when people are ready to receive him. The Buddha's service. The Buddha was born to dispel the darkness of ignorance and to show to the world how to be free from suffering. The Buddha was the embodiment of all the virtues that he preached. During his successful and eventful ministry of 45 years, he translated all his words into actions. At no time did he ever show any human frailty or any base passion. The Buddha's moral code is the most perfect the world has ever known. For more than 25 centuries, millions of people have found inspiration and solace in his teaching. His greatness still shines today like a sun that outshines the glow of lesser lights. His teachings still beckon the weary pilgrim to the security and peace of Nibbana. No other person has sacrificed so much of his worldly comfort for the sake of suffering humanity. The Buddha was the first religious leader in human history to admonish against animal sacrifice for any reason and to appeal to people not to harm any living creature. To the Buddha, religion was not a bargain but a way to enlightenment. He did not want followers with blind faith. He wanted followers who could think freely and wisely. The entire human race has been blessed with his presence. There was never an occasion when the Buddha expressed any unfriendliness towards a single person, not even to his opponents and worst enemies, did the Buddha express any unfriendliness. There were a few prejudiced minds who turned against the Buddha and who tried to kill him, yet the Buddha never treated them as enemies. The Buddha once said, "As an elephant in the battlefield endures the arrows that are shot into him, so will I endure the abuse and unfriendly expressions of others." Dhammapada 320. In the annals of history, no man is recorded as having so consecrated himself to the welfare of all living beings as did the Buddha. From the hour of his enlightenment to the end of his life, he strove tirelessly to elevate mankind. He slept only 2 hours a day, though 25 centuries have gone since the passing away of this great teacher. His message of love and wisdom still exists in its pristine purity. This message is still decisively influencing the destinies of humanity. He was the most compassionate one who illuminated this world with loving kindness. After attaining Nibbana, the Buddha left a deathless message that is still with us. Today, we are confronted by the terrible threat to world peace. At no time in the history of the world is his message more needed than it is now. The Buddha was born to dispel the darkness of ignorance and to show the world how to get rid of suffering and disease, decay and death, and all the worries and miseries of living beings. According to some beliefs, a certain god will appear in this world from time to time to destroy wicked people and to protect the good one. Buddha did not appear in this world to destroy wicked people, but to show them the correct path. In the history of the world until the Buddha's time, did he ever hear of any religious teacher who was so filled with such all-absorbing sympathy and love for suffering humanity as was the Buddha? At about the same time as the Buddha, we heard of some wise men in Greece, Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle, and many others. But they were only philosophers and thinkers and seekers after truth. They lacked any inspiring love for the suffering multitudes. The Buddha's way of saving mankind was to teach them how to find salvation. He was not interested in alleviating a few chance cases of physical and mental distress. He was more concerned with revealing a path that all people could follow. Let us take all the great philosophers, psychologists, great thinkers, scientists, rationalists, social workers, reformers, and other religious teachers and compare with an unbiased mind their greatness, virtues, services, and wisdom with the Buddha's virtues, compassion, and enlightenment. One can understand where the Buddha stands amongst all those great people. Historical evidence of the Buddha. The Buddha is the greatest conqueror the world has ever seen. His teaching illuminates the way for mankind to cross from a world of darkness, hatred, and suffering to a new world of light, love, and happiness. Gautama the Buddha was not a mythical figure, but an actual historical personality who introduced the religion known today as Buddhism. Evidence to prove the existence of this great religious teacher are to be found in the following facts. The testimonies of those who knew him personally. These testimonies were recorded in the rock inscriptions, pillars, and pagodas made in his honor. These testimonies and monuments to his memory were created by kings and others who were near enough to his time to be able to verify the story of his life. The discovery of places and the remains of buildings that were mentioned in the narrative of his time. The Sangha, the holy order which he founded, has had an unbroken existence to the present day. The Sangha possessed the facts of his life and teachings which have been transmitted from generation to generation in various parts of the world. The fact that in the very year of his death and at various times subsequently, conventions and councils of the Sangha were held for the verification of the actual teachings of the founder. These verified teachings have been passed on from teacher to pupil from his time to the present day. After his passing away, his body was cremated and the bodily relics were divided among 8 kingdoms in India. Each king built a pagoda to contain his portion of the relics. The portion given to King Ajatasattu was enshrined by him in the pagoda of Rajagriha. Less than 2 centuries later, Emperor Asoka took the relics and distributed them throughout his empire. The inscriptions enshrined in this and other pagodas confirm that those were the relics of Gautama the Buddha. The Mahavamsa, the best and authentic ancient history known to us, gives detailed particulars of life as well as details of the life of the Emperor Asoka and all other sovereigns related to Buddhist history. Indian history has also given a prominent place to the Buddha's life, activities, Buddhist traditions, and customs. The records which we can find in the Buddhist countries where people received Buddhism a few hundred years after the Buddha's passing away, such as Sri Lanka, Burma, China, Tibet, Nepal, Korea, Mongolia, Japan, Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos, show unbroken historical, cultural, religious, literary, and traditional evidence that there was a religious teacher in India known as Gautama the Buddha. The Tripitaka, an unbroken record of his 45 years of teaching, is more than sufficient to prove that the Buddha really lived in the world. The accuracy and authenticity of the Buddhist text is supported by the fact that they provide the information for historians to write Indian history during the 5th and 6th century BC. Texts, which represent the earliest reliable written records in India, provide a profound insight into the socio-economic, cultural and political environment and conditions during the Buddha's lifetime, as well as into the lives of his contemporaries such as King Bimbisara. Salvation through Arahantahood. Attaining Nibbana through Arahantahood is not selfish. Certain Buddhists believe to seek salvation by becoming an Arahant is a selfish move, because everyone, they claim, must try to become a Buddha in order to save others. This particular belief has absolutely no ground in the teaching of the Buddha. The Buddha never mentioned that he wanted to save every living being in this whole universe. He offered his help only to those who were spiritually matured and willing to accept his noble way of life. The doors to the deathless are open. Let those who will hear leave wrong doctrine. Now shall I turn the wheel of the great law, for this I go to the Cassian city. There shall I beat the drum of deathlessness, in this world that is groping in the dark. By Arya Pariyasana Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya. The belief that everyone must strive to become a Buddha in order to attain salvation cannot be found in the original teachings of the Buddha. This belief is just like asking every person to become a doctor in order to cure other people and himself of diseases. This advice is most impractical. If people want to cure themselves of their sickness, they can get the medical advice from a qualified doctor. This they can do without waiting until they are all doctors before curing themselves, nor is there any need for each and every person to be a doctor. If everyone becomes a doctor, who are going to be their patients? In the same way, if everyone is going to become Buddhas, who is going to save whom? Of course, those who wish to become doctors can do so, but they must have intelligence, courage, and the means to study medicine. Likewise, it is not compulsory for everyone to become a Buddha to find his salvation. Those who wish to become Buddhas can do so. However, they need the courage and knowledge to sacrifice their comforts and practice all kinds of renunciations in order to attain Buddhahood. Others can be content to be healthy. To attain Arahantahood, one has to eradicate all greed and selfishness. This implies that while relating with others, an Arahant will act with compassion and try to inspire others to go on the path leading to liberation. He is a living proof of the good results that accrue to a person who follows the method taught by the Buddha. The attainment of Nibbana is not possible if one acts with a selfish motive. Therefore, it is baseless to say that striving to become an Arahant is a selfish act. Buddhahood is indisputably the best and the noblest of all the three ideals: Supreme Buddha, Silent Buddha, and Arahant. But not everyone is capable of achieving this highest ideal. Surely all scientists cannot be Einsteins and Newtons. There must be room for lesser scientists who nevertheless help the world according to their capabilities. Bodhisattva. A bodhisattva is a being devoted to enlightenment. As a compassionate being, a bodhisattva is destined to attain Buddhahood and become a future Buddha through the cultivation of his mind. In order to gain supreme enlightenment, he practices transcendental virtues, parami, to perfection. The virtues are generosity, morality, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, determination, loving-kindness, and even-mindedness. He cultivates these parami with compassion and wisdom without being influenced by selfish motives or self-conceit. He works for the welfare and the happiness of all beings, seeking to lessen the suffering of others throughout the series of his countless lives. In his journey to perfection, he is prepared to practice these virtues, sometimes even at the expense of his own life. In the Pali scriptures, the designation Bodhisatta is given to Prince Siddhartha before his enlightenment and to his former lives. The Buddha himself used this term when speaking of his life prior to enlightenment. According to the Pali text, there is no mention of Buddha, Bodhi, being the only way to attain the final goal of nirvanic bliss. It was very rare for a disciple during the Buddha's time to forego the opportunity to attain sainthood and instead declare bodhisattvahood as his aspiration. However, there are some records that some followers of the Buddha did aspire to become bodhisattvas to gain Buddhahood. In the Mahayana school of thought, the bodhisattva cult, however, plays an important role. The Mahayana idea regards the bodhisattva as a being who, having brought himself to the brink of nirvana, voluntarily delays the acquisition of his prize so that he may return to the world to make it accessible to others. He deliberately chooses to postpone his release from samsara in order to show the path for others to attain nirvana. Although Theravada Buddhists respect bodhisattvas, they do not regard them as being in the same position to enlighten or save others before their own enlightenment. Bodhisattvas are therefore not regarded as saviors in order to gain their final salvation. All beings must follow the method prescribed by the Buddha and follow the example set by him. They must also personally eradicate their mental defilements and develop all the great virtues. Theravada Buddhists do not subscribe to the belief that everyone must strive to become a Buddha in order to gain nirvana. However, the word Bodhi is used to refer to the qualities of a Buddha, or Pasika Buddha, and Arahant in expressions such as Sammasam Bodhi, Pasika Bodhi, and Savaka Bodhi. In addition, many of the Buddhas mentioned in the Mahayana school are not historical Buddhas, and are therefore not given much attention by Theravada Buddhists. The notion that certain Buddha and Bodhisattvas are waiting in Sakavati, pure abode, for those who pray to them is a notion quite foreign to the fundamental teachings of the Buddha. Certain Bodhisattvas are said to voluntarily remain in Sukhavati without gaining enlightenment themselves until every living being is saved. Given the magnitude of the universe and the infinite number of beings who are enslaved by ignorance and selfish desire, this is clearly an impossible task, since there can be no end to the number of beings. Must a bodhisattva always be a Buddhist? We may find among Buddhists some self-sacrificing and ever-loving bodhisattvas. Sometimes they may even be aware of their lofty aspiration, but they instinctively work hard to serve others and cultivate their pristine qualities. Nevertheless, bodhisattvas are not only found among Buddhists, but possibly among the other religionists as well. The Jataka stories, which relate the previous birth stories of the Buddha, describe the families and forms of existence taken by the bodhisattva. Sometimes he was born as an animal. It is hard to believe that he could have been born in a Buddhist family in each and every life. But no matter what form he was born as or family he was born into, he invariably strived hard to develop certain virtues. His aspiration to gain perfection from life to life until final birth, when he emerged as a Buddha, is the quality which clearly distinguishes a bodhisattva from other beings. Attainment of the Buddhahood. The attainment of Buddhahood is the most difficult task that a person can pursue in this world. The Buddhahood is not reserved only for chosen people or for supernatural beings. Anyone can become a Buddha. No founder of any other religion ever said that his followers can have the opportunity or potentiality to attain the same position as the founder. However, attaining Buddhahood is the most difficult task a person can pursue in this world. One must work hard by sacrificing one's worldly pleasures. One has to develop and purify one's mind from all evil thoughts in order to obtain this enlightenment. It will take innumerable births for a person to purify himself and to develop his mind in order to become a Buddha. Long periods of great effort are necessary in order to complete the high qualification of this self-training. The course of this self-training, which culminates in Buddhahood, includes self-discipline, self-restraint, superhuman effort, firm determination, and willingness to undergo any kind of suffering for the sake of other living beings who are suffering in this world. This clearly shows that the Buddha did not obtain the supreme enlightenment by simply praying, worshipping, or making offerings to some supernatural being. He attained Buddhahood by the purification of his mind and heart. He gained supreme enlightenment without the influence of any external supernatural forces, but by the development of his own insight. Thus, only a man who has firm determination and courage to overcome all hindrance, weaknesses, and selfish desires can attain Buddhahood. Prince Siddhartha did not attain Buddhahood overnight simply by sitting under the Bodhi tree, nor a supernatural being appeared and revealed anything by whispering into his ear while he was in deep meditation under the Bodhi tree. Behind his supreme enlightenment, there was a long history of previous births. Many of the Jataka stories tell us how he worked hard by sacrificing his life in many previous births to attain supreme Buddhahood. No one can attain Buddhahood without devoting many lifetimes practicing the 10 perfections. Explains why a supreme Buddha appears only at every long intervals of time. Therefore, the Buddha's advice to his followers is that in order to find salvation, it is not necessary for each person and every person to wait until he gains his Buddhahood. Aspirants can also find their salvation by becoming Pasika Buddha, Silent Buddha, or Arahants, saints. Pasika Buddhas appear in this world during the period when there is no other enlightened Buddha. They are also enlightened, although their degree of perfection is not similar to that of the Supreme Buddha. They experience the same nirvanic bliss. Unlike the Supreme Buddha, they do not preach to the masses. They lead a life of solitude. Arahantas can also experience the same nirvanic bliss as the Buddhas do. There is no discrimination or status in nirvana. The only difference is that Arahantas do not have the supreme enlightenment to be able to enlighten others in the same way as the Buddhas do. Arahantas have overcome all their desires and other human weaknesses. They can appreciate the Dhamma which was discovered and taught by the Buddha. They can also show others the correct Buddhist way of life and the path to salvation. Kicho Buddhanan Upado. Rare is the appearance of the Buddhas. Dhammapada 182. Trikaya, the three bodies of the Buddha. The three bodies of the Buddha consist of Dharmakaya, truth body, Sambhogakaya, enjoyment body, and Nirmanakaya, manifestation body. In the Mahayana philosophy, the personality of the Buddha is given an elaborate treatment. According to this philosophy, the Buddhas have three bodies, Trikaya, or three aspects of personality, the Dharmakaya, the Sambhogakaya, and the Nirmanakaya. After a Buddha has attained enlightenment, he is a living embodiment of wisdom, compassion, happiness, and freedom. At the beginning, there was only one Buddha in the Buddhist tradition. He is the historical Sakyamuni the Buddha. However, even during his lifetime, he made the distinction between himself as the enlightened, historical individual, on one hand, and himself as the embodiment of truth, on the other hand. The enlightened personality was known as the Rupakaya, form body, or Nirmanakaya, manifestation body. This was the physical body of the Buddha who was born among men, attained enlightenment, preached the Dhamma, and attained Mahaparinibbana. The manifestation body or physical body of Buddhas are many and differ from one another. On the other hand, the principle of enlightenment, which is embodied in him, is known as Dharmakaya or truth body. This is the essence of the Buddha and is independent of the person realizing it. Dhamma in this expression means truth, and does not refer to the verbal teachings which were recorded down in the scriptures. The teaching of the Buddha also emanates from the essence or truth, so the real essential Buddha is truth, or the principle of enlightenment. This idea is clearly stated in the original Pali text of the Theravada. The Buddha told Vesata that the Tathagata, the Buddha, was Dharmakaya, the truth body, or the embodiment of truth, as well as Dharmabuddha, truth become, that is, one who has become truth, Digha Nikaya. On another occasion, the Buddha told Vakali, he who sees the Dhamma, truth, sees a Tathagata. He who sees a Tathagata sees the Dhamma, Samyutta Nikaya. That is to say, the Buddha is equal to truth, and all Buddhas are one and the same, being no different from one another in the Dharma Kaya, because truth is one. In the Buddha's lifetime, both the Nirmana Kaya and the Dharma Kaya were united in his. However, after his Parinibbana, the distinction became more pronounced, especially in the Mahayana philosophy. His manifestation body was dead and enshrined in the form of relics and stupas. His Dhamma body is eternally present. Later, the Mahayana philosophy developed the Sambhogakaya, the enjoyment body. The Sambhogakaya can be considered as a body or aspect through which the Buddha enjoyed himself in the Dhamma, in teaching the truth, in leading others to the realization of the truth, and in enjoying the company of good, noble people. This is the selfless, pure spiritual enjoyment, not to be confused with sensual pleasure. This enjoyment body is not categorically mentioned in Theravada texts, although it can be appreciated without contradiction if understood in this context. In Mahayana, the enjoyment body of the Buddha, unlike the impersonal, abstract principle of the Dhamma Kaya, is also considered as a person, through not a human, historical person. Although the terms Sambhogakaya and Dharmakaya found in the later Pali works come from Mahayana and semi-Mahayana works, scholars from other traditions did not show hostility towards them. Then, Buddha Gosa, in his Visuddhi Magga, referred thus to the bodies of the Buddha. The Buddha is possessed of a beautiful Rupakaya adorned with 80 minor and 32 major signs of a great man, and possessed of a Dharmakaya purified in every way and glorified by Sila, Samadhi, full of splendor and virtue, incomparable and fully enlightened. Though Buddha Gosa's conception was realistic, he was not immune from the religious bias of attributing superhuman power to the Buddha. In the Atthasalini, he said that during the 3 months absence of the Buddha, when he was engaged in preaching the Abhidhamma to his mother in the Tusita heaven, he created some Nimitta Buddhas as exact replicas of himself. These Nimitta Buddhas could not be distinguished from the Buddha in voice, words, and even the rays of light that issued only by the gods of the higher realms of existence and not by ordinary gods or men. From this description, it is clear that the early Theravadins conceived Buddha's Rupakaya or Sambhogakaya as that of a human being, and his Dharmakaya as the collection of his Dhamma, that is, doctrines and disciplinary roles, collectively.